What's up, little psychos? I'm Investigator Slater, host of the Psychopedia podcast. Psychopedia is a true crime podcast delivering raw, real, and absolutely gripping episodes every single week. I dig deep to uncover fascinating details of heinous true crime cases while exploring criminology and psychology theories. I take you into the absolute darkest corners of the human psyche, my favorite territory, and present cases like you've never heard them before. Follow and listen to Psychopedia everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is the Leftovers Podcast with Derek Kramer.
I'm going to say a stupid thing right now. Pudding. Where's my money?
Frank R. Curry.
I didn't say run through a wall. Do it again? Okay.
And Kyle Powell.
The Sabres were actually in a playoff spot for the entire year.
On WGR550.com.
Welcome into another episode of Leftovers Podcast. No Frank R. Curry, no Kyle Powell, just Derek Kramer to start this show off here for you right now. As, let's not waste any time here. I've got a guest waiting for me, and it's a great listen. It's Mark Schofield.
And wasting no time now on the Leftovers Podcast, the one, the only, Mark Schofield joining us now as he not only blesses the reins, but now he blesses us with his presence here on the Leftovers Podcast. Mark, it's Derek. What's going on, brother?
What's going on, Derek? Always great to be with you. Always good to have football in the air, but perhaps even better. Now, look, I'm an older guy. I'm not as hip as the young kids like yourself. But I am on the Instagram, and I have noticed that Letterkenny is back in production, which means we're going to be getting some new Letterkenny episodes soon. Good. So that is a good thing as well.
That's always a good thing. And, I mean, any Letterkenny fan at this point has at one point, accidental or on purpose, now just greeted a random stranger just going, "Hi, you now."
Hi, you know, yeah, and I love the allegedly. I tack that on to almost any sort of question that I get, like, "Mark, did you take out the trash?" Allegedly. You know, I just drop that in all the time, but yeah, it makes for great quotes. It's always fun. I've turned my brother-in-law onto the show as well, so we're growing the Letterkenny Nation out day by day.
And yes, and if you're already not following Mark Schofield, there's an added bonus now to his football content, and that is the constance of Letterkenny gifts. So,
which are just always tremendous.
Always tremendous. Always good for anything at this point. But
yeah, I mean, especially the coach kicking trash cans. Like, you can drop that into almost any conversation on Twitter, and it's appropriate.
Barging into the conversation, being angry about something. It's a very versatile gift.
Mm-hmm. It's perfect.
But we have another purpose here, Mark, and, you know, one of the biggest things about you is the elite takes of the quarterbacks these days, and I don't want to get too much into the Patriots because that sort of thing just makes me sad because I know they're going to be fine, but, let's get a little bit of tidbits here on New England and, of course, the new preseason flavor du jour, the Jarrett Stidham madness.
The Jarrett Stidham madness. And, you know, Patriots fans, we have this tendency, you know, every season we latch on to a rookie, sometimes an undrafted player, and start to really sort of hype them up. And we have seen the Patriots, you know, recently hit on some sort of undrafted players. J.C. Jackson, perhaps the most recent example of that, the undrafted free agent defensive back out of Maryland, who became their cornerback two opposite Stephon Gilmore last year. And this year it's really two names, Derek. It's Jarrett Stidham. You know, and part of the reason for that is the Patriots do realize that, yes, Tom Brady is 42, and yes, eventually Father Time will emerge victorious in this clash between Brady and age. And so they are sort of looking to the future, and Jarrett Stidham came out and played well against the Lions last week. I think he was 14 of 24 for about 170 and a touchdown. Got a chance to run a two-minute drill at the end of the first half, get the team into field goal range, although Steven Gostkowski missed a field goal, and he looked good, but again, it's early. It's the first preseason game. He's going up against twos and threes, and so you can't really take too much from it, even though he did look good running the offense. The player that has everybody really excited is Jacoby Myers, the undrafted free agent wide receiver out of NC State, who was a quarterback convert while in college. And he has probably not just locked down a roster spot, but he's been running with the ones. And he caught a touchdown from Stidham. He looks great, runs good routes. He's not an incredible athlete, which is probably why he fell out of the draft itself. But as a converted quarterback, he has good knowledge of the passing game and route concepts and timing. And he's talked about it with reporters, you know, after practice, during training camp. But look, you know, I know when I'm running my routes, like, I need to get into my break and get out of my break because I know that the quarterback is going to be waiting on me if I don't. So he has that understanding of how the game works. And so, you know, Patriots fans are excited about these two young players. There's an excitement level about a lot of the younger players that have come in, and even a player like Isaiah Wynn, last year's first-round draft choice, who was hurt last year. And so, you know, there's excitement about these younger guys. And part of that is, you know, what Patriots fans go through each offseason. Part of it is sort of, at least in Stidham's case, a nod to what might be the future for this team.
Mark Schofield joining us on the Leftovers podcast here. And, Mark, the major thing about this is, when are we finally going to see that nice little decline where the Patriots are vulnerable? They're not a guarantee to win 11 games and everything of the sort there. Brady's obviously not going to be doing much throughout this sort of training camp, and I'm just trying to get a glimpse here. When do you really think that it finally can happen? Like, you're starting to see his game slow down a little bit, but he's still Brady. He's still, you know, right, lock it down guy.
Yeah, Derek, I think you saw some glimpses of it last year, and, you know, there are rumblings that Brady was dealing with some sort of injury, a lower body knee type injury late into the season. I mean, you look at it, and the game, Derek, that sticks in my mind, in all honesty, with this team is that second Buffalo game. You know, that was late in the season, and the Patriots were looking to, you know, lock down their playoff position. And yes, they won that game. But when I watched that game that day and rewatched it, I came away thinking, I don't know if this passing game for the New England Patriots is going to be effective enough, you know, to go out there and compete in the playoffs. And it turned out that they were able to do what they could and won another Super Bowl. But it raised that sort of specter of, you know, is the sort of facade giving way here? And are we seeing perhaps the end or what Brady might look like when he's in decline? Now, if it was an injury situation, maybe it was that. But I do think there's also some credit to be given to the Buffalo defense. This is a defense that gave the New England Patriots fits in both of their games. You know, that Monday nighter, if Buffalo had competent play at the quarterback position in that game might have turned out completely differently. That was a close game. Patriots got a pick six at the end of that one that sort of solidified it, but the New England offense struggled in that game. Patriots offense in particular, the passing game, struggled in that second meeting. And so Buffalo has shown, at least, you know, the last two meetings, an ability to sort of slow down this offense and give Tom Brady some difficulties. And so I think, you know, in terms of predicting when it might sort of come to an end, the potential is there this season. You saw, you know, some weaknesses from this team last year. Obviously, expectations are high, but with the way that some of the teams in the AFC East, Buffalo and the Jets in particular, have sort of addressed some off-season needs and made some acquisitions, you could see, you know, I don't think that the, you know, the in-division games that the Patriots have on the schedule are the certain locks they might have been maybe a year ago. Especially in Buffalo with the Jets, because I think those two teams have really helped themselves this offseason. And so it might be a tougher sled, you know, tougher road to hoe for the New England Patriots this year.
All right. Now, this episode today, Mark, we're doing a little bit of a fantasy spin, so I got to ask. I've got Sony Michel, so selfishly I'm asking for this reason. The Patriots running back situation. Never is it a constant, steady thing. Generally, it is a committee thing. But last year, you saw Sony Michel kind of emerge as almost like a running back one sort of thing, where he was getting trusted with the majority of these carries. What's it looking like the rotation-wise with running back in the backfield there, the presence of Damian Harris, obviously the presence that won't go away with James White, and with Sony Michel there?
Yeah, Derek, it's like the $64 million question. I mean, anytime I go on a fantasy show or, you know, any show that even talks about, you know, fantasy football in any sense, you know, that running back in New England situation is brought up. And I think if you're a Sony Michel owner like yourself, you have to feel pretty comfortable right now as opposed to maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago. Because if you go back a couple of weeks, a month or so ago, the buzz was Damian Harris. He was a guy with, you know, three down potential. Alabama trusted him with blitz pickup. They trusted him in pass protection. They left him on the field in certain passing downs. They trusted him as a receiver out of the backfield. And when you look at Sony Michel's rookie year, there was a huge run-pass split ratio when he was on the field. If he was on the field, you could be almost certain they were going to run the ball. If he wasn't on the field, then you probably think they're going to throw the ball, and the numbers bear that out. Now, part of that was Michel was banged up for the preseason, so he didn't get up to speed with, you know, pass protection responsibilities, and so they just didn't have him capable of doing that. But now he's been healthy. They had the knee cleaned up. and he's been a big part of their passing game. Word out of camp, people, you know, not that you buy so much into practice, training camp stats, but as of, I think, 2 days ago, Brady had not thrown an incompletion when targeting Sony Michel so far in this training camp. They're getting him involved in the passing game, and so I think that's a very good sign for Sony Michel owners. The other thing to consider with this team, even if it is a running back by committee approach, I think you're going to see a lot more 21, you know, two running backs, a 20 personnel, two running backs again, type of personnel packages from New England. Because let's not forget, this is a team that is now trying to replace Robert Gronkowski. And they certainly don't have a one-to-one replacement in mind for him. They might do it by a tight end by committee approach, or they might go with more two running back packages and replace tight end production with guys like Sony Michel out of the backfield and Rex Burkhead and James White and Damian Harris. And if they're going to go that route, which it seems like they might, they've been doing a lot of it this training camp, that means even more opportunities for guys like Michel. And so while in the past it's been tough sort of predict running back usage, I think the Patriots running back room is going to provide some fantasy opportunities, and I think Michel is going to get the lion's share of those at the start.
All right, Mark, now we bounce around the league here a little bit real quick for you. Some of these quarterbacks, the rookies in particular, Daniel Jones looked to me strangely impressive, and Kyler Murray looked good with Arizona. Dwayne Haskins up and down with a pair of interceptions. What do you think of the trio of rookies?
You know, it's hard not to be sort of impressed by what Jones did. You know, I was not high on him at all. He was not in my top five of the quarterback groups in this group that came out. But it's hard to ignore 5 for 5, 67 yards and a touchdown on his one drive. I think Pat Schumer did a great job in getting him into some good situations. I think 4 of his 5 passing attempts were on 1st and 10 situations. And so, you know, that's a nice down and distance to throw the ball. They did some stuff off play action, some stuff off RPO. I think his best throw was at 3rd and 8, where he was facing a blitz and he sped things up to get the ball out. Showed good touch and placement. So I thought it was a great debut for him. I think Murray showed you what he can do. You saw the athleticism a bit. You saw him move around a bit. You know, that quick release is going to help him. The arm talent is there. And so it's just a matter of, can they put that all together in Arizona? But it does seem like with Cliff Kingsbury and that offense that Murray's obviously somewhat familiar with, there's a chance for that to be a productive offense. Whether it translates into wins and losses, we don't know yet. But I still think it's hard not to be excited about Murray. You know, and with Haskins, look, rookies are going to have their bumps. I think Haskins is there sort of mentally. It's just putting the mental together with the mechanics and the execution is going to be the big thing for him. We didn't see a lot of that in his debut. There were the interceptions, like you pointed out. But obviously, look, it's early with all of these guys. And the thing to remember with young quarterbacks, and with quarterbacks in general, is that the developmental process is not linear. It's not a perfect line. It doesn't go the way you expect. There are going to be peaks and valleys. And Jones might come out this week and throw a couple of picks, and Haskins might come out and look fantastic. There will be bumps along the way. But I think for all three of these guys, they're on their way, and so I think fans of those franchises should be at least comforted by some of what they've seen so far.
All right, and now I need comfort over here on this fan base, Mark. Josh Allen, one of the more enigmatic quarterbacks from last year's class, and now coming into his second season, along with the likes of Darnold, Mayfield, Jackson, and Rosen. What do you think about Josh Allen as when it comes to pertaining to year two? How do you think it's going to look if you've been able to catch any of Allen through that first preseason game? What do you think is going to happen here with Allen and the Bills?
Well, we always sort of expect that year one to year two boost for a young quarterback, especially one that, you know, comes in, starts off, you know, as the starter, goes through some injuries and things like that. But now they get a chance to sort of be in the build and be in the system for an entire offseason where they're not running from interview to interview, from combine to Senior Bowl and all of the other stuff that goes with that. And that's going to be a big boost for him from the mental side, from the comfort side. And so that part of it is there. The other part is sort of the execution. And that's where some of the acquisitions, I think, will help this team. You look at some of the pieces they've added up front to get him a little bit of protection. You look at the acquisition of a guy like Cole Beasley, who I think is going to be huge for his development. You know, you look at what Brian Daboll likes to do on offense. Yes, he's going to have that vertical element to it to tailor to what Allen does best as a quarterback. When we get into that sort of 3rd and 4 to 3rd and 6 type range, nice to have that guy that can wiggle himself free underneath. And when you watch Cole Beasley as a route runner, he's always finding a way to work himself open. That's huge for an offense. I see it day in and day out, week in and week out with Tom Brady and Julian Edelman, and how those two can get on the same page in critical moments. I mean, if you don't think a guy with that kind of skill set can matter, watch Super Bowl 53 again when you see how they can get a guy like Julian Edelman, an MVP, because he has that relationship with his quarterback. I think Cole Beasley's presence in this offense will be perhaps the biggest element to Josh Allen's development here in year two. And so I think you put these pieces together, and let's not forget, two things that really worked in his favor last year. The arm talent was as advertised, if not better. You know, and that's certainly going to help him, because if you're still step slow with your decision-making process, that arm could be the great equalizer. So that will definitely help him. And his athleticism, we knew he was athletic, but it translated better to the NFL than I expected, and I think a lot of other people expected. And that will also help him out in some situations where, okay, if he doesn't trust what he's seen with his mind and with his eyes, he can sort of make something happen with his legs. You don't want it to be an absolute crutch for him, but that's that little X factor. And we've seen teams like the New England Patriots struggle when defending mobile, athletic quarterbacks. That can also be an element that really helps his development. And so you put all that together, I think Bills fans should be excited about what they're going to see in year two. Again, don't worry so much about training camp stats or preseason stats. Look at the growth and development from him as an NFL quarterback, and I think you'll be pretty pleased with what you're seeing.
Mark, that is probably some of the best quarterback take on Josh Allen that we're getting from year one to year two that a lot of people are going to hear. So thank you for that. I mean,
that's what I do.
You've always got the way to help comfort me. I mean, we did this a year ago, with the NFL draft.
Sure.
And
yeah, I mean, let's think about where we came from 1 a.m. post round one to now. And when I was on with you guys after that draft, we were like trying to piece it together, trying to see how it could work. But if you would have told us at that moment that, look, you know, there's going to be some excitement about Allen in year two, the arm is going to be better than we thought, the athleticism is going to be better than we thought, I think anybody would have taken that as a Bills fan in that moment. So take a step back, breathe, relax. Bill Walsh famously said, and look, Bill Walsh knew more about quarterback play than I ever will. He said, quarterback's going to figure it out by year three. If they don't figure it out by year three, then that's when you have to start to worry. I know with the NFL and the economy, the way it works, with the rookie salary scale and all that, we want them to be effective earlier than that, but still, it's only year two. Don't panic yet.
Don't panic yet. These are trusted words, wise words from our man, Mark Schofield. Mark, thank you, as always, for taking the time to join us.
Of course, my friend. Always a blast to be on with you, buddy.
Yes, and pitter-patter, my good sir.
Pitter-patter. Let's get at her.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
So, we talked with Mark Schofield. Well, I talked with Mark Schofield.
You did.
Oh my God, who is this voice right here?
I'm back.
It's Frank, guys.
Yay.
Frank is back. You see, I talked with Mark Schofield earlier in the day, and I had a plan for this day, for this podcast. And it turns out that, like many days, the Buffalo Sabres have decided to throw a wrench into it.
But it's a good wrench.
It's a good wrench. And we'll talk more on that in a second. My plan, though, was I was going to talk about fantasy football, do a fantasy cast kind of thing. Mark Schofield came on, talk about the quarterbacks in the NFL, the rookies. Are the Patriots going to slow down a little bit? He had some very kind words about the Bills and about even Josh Allen in more particular as well. So he gives you a good view of what had to be said there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always fun to talk to Mark and also share our Letterkenny quotes. But Frank is back.
I'm back. Vacation's over.
So now vacation Frank has left.
Yes.
Frank, we've been coming up with theories as to what you've been doing since you've been off the podcast for such a long time.
So I've been gone, what, like 2 weeks?
Yes.
Okay.
Each theory more ridiculous than the last.
Hit me with said theories.
Okay.
Well, one of them was that you were smashing through drywall, Kool-Aid man style, and that's how you were getting some paychecks.
Trust me, I wish.
That was our favorite one, was that.
That is a great, I love that. And but then, I wish.
And then we thought,
I could get paid to smash through drywall.
Oh, yeah. Like, that'd be the fantastic way to do anything. It's just smash through drywall, Kool-Aid man style.
I'll do it on a skateboard. And you know where I'm going with that.
Yes, I do. Don't get yourself killed, please.
No promises.
You just got back.
I know.
But Frank is back. No Kyle today. He's on assignment for the Bisons, and that's why I talked to Mark. And
let me tell you something, though. Vacation Frank is an ass.
What, do you just mean to random people?
No, he made me red.
No, that just means you're dumb. Put on sunscreen, you dope.
I did.
So Frank is finally back, first from working and other stuff, and then going on vacation, and now the return of Frank Arcuri.
Yay.
It's not as spectacular as you'd think, as I had to start the show by myself, then talk to Mark Schofield, and now, at a later point in the day, yes, this is how post-production works, by the way, is there's three different time periods in which this podcast has been recorded and put together.
That's okay.
And I'm breaking the fourth wall, Kool-Aid man style. Oh, yeah. And that's how you go full circle. But I wanted to talk fantasy football, and now I can't.
We can.
You can, but there's more days to do that and less days to do it about when the Buffalo Sabres announce that they're going back to Royal freaking Blue, baby.
It's happening.
That's kind of the news du jour.
It's finally happening.
We have finally done it. Cheers.
The thing that we didn't know if they were ever going to do.
I mean, I feel like they were eventually going to do it. It's just that it's finally here. There's two very good victories about this. One, we don't ever have to complain about it or hear anyone complain about it ever again.
Yeah.
The Sabres, like, they're going to be printing money. These jerseys are going to come out and back onto the shelves, and everyone's just going to buy them. Mm-hmm. And then two, well, they have one of the best-looking jerseys in all of hockey.
As long as... I assume they're going to know what they're doing. They got to make sure that they do it.
Ready? Current jersey? Go into Photoshop, turn it to royal blue. Not that hard.
Probably.
That's
probably
all you have to do.
Yeah, probably the way to go.
Come on, they're not that stupid. They're not that stupid. They're not.
You
can't screw this up. You cannot screw this up.
It's
going to
be great. It's going to be great.
If they went with a redesign of the jersey... And the striping, that'd be foolish.
Yeah. You don't. They don't. Because they don't need to.
They don't need to. Everything's gonna be great.
Yes.
I'm intrigued about this gold, these jerseys for next season.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I feel more excited about it because of the fact that the Sabres are finally giving us something that we want. Mm-hmm. Next part, winning team. Baby steps.
Yes, baby steps.
Baby steps.
Baby steps.
One baby step for mankind. But, yeah, the Sabres, it turns out that they actually do care about us, and they do like putting an aesthetic-looking thing on the ice. And maybe, hopefully, it's just one of those look-good, feel-good, play-good sort of scenarios.
Maybe.
Like, I feel like that would help. It's just, hey, yo, we're in royal blue. We're going to be good now. Also,
I hope.
Also, that'd be a great...
I hope they just be good no matter what.
Well, yes. Like, have them do good with these gold unis would be pretty cool, too. But now Jack Eichel gets to come around and showcase his stuff in royal blue.
Yeah, that's going to be nice.
Rasmus Dahlin gets to enter into the height of his career in royal blue.
Yeah, that's going to be nice.
Casey Mittelstadt will be through busting that slump of his rookie season and transitioning into year three in royal blue. Sam Reinhart and Jeff Skinner are going to continue to be key pieces in royal blue. Do you see where I'm going with this? They're going to be better, and they're going to look good doing it.
They're going to look good.
They're going to look good.
It's going to be so nice.
So
I can't wait.
Yeah, it's
2020.
2020.
Hashtag Royal Blue 2020.
That's already happening. Created. There's no campaign needed.
I know.
It's done.
No, I know.
It is done. It is decided.
It's happening.
It's done.
It's happening.
All right, now trade Risto next. What?
No, yeah, do that. Yeah.
We were mentioning this sort of thing, though, with on the last podcast with Rasmus Ristolainen. Kyle and I were talking about it, and it seemed like there was a bit of a, not cryptic, because it's more like a positive sort of thing, but John Warrow brought it up that with Brayton, he was talking with Brayton on Twitter, and it seems like he hinted that a lot of this Ristolainen and not getting dealt thing has to do with the RFAs not being signed. And it's a matter of when.
That? Okay, I can see that.
It makes sense.
I think that makes a
lot. Look at the two teams.
I think
that
it makes
most,
a lot more sense than people think.
Look at the two teams that were most frequently tied in rumors with Ristolainen. The Tampa Bay Lightning,
Winnipeg,
and the Winnipeg Jets.
Both have RFAs that need to be signed.
Brayden Point, and then Kyle Connor and Patrick Laine.
Yep.
Books need to get cooked.
Mm-hmm.
And with all the right-handed shots they brought in, it was always going to be a matter of when.
Yeah. And it's still going to be that.
But now, guess what? We had another matter of when just get decided. When are the Sabres finally going to go back to Royal Blue? Well, guess what? We've got that.
We have that.
I don't want the same answer to the question next year, but...
Yeah.
When's Rasmus Ristolainen going to get traded? Okay, next year. What?
Wait, what?
Crap. But, no, this is... It's a strangely feel-good thing about this team now with... Rasmus Ristolainen and, you know, how they're really retooling the entire defense.
Mm-hmm.
And now they go back to this Royal Blue. This is a small thing. We're making a big deal out of a smaller thing. It's a jersey.
It is. At the end of the day, it is.
But this is probably one of the happiest stages of Sabres Twitter that we've seen in recent memory.
In a long time.
I mean... There was the height of Jack Eichel coming in, Rasmus Dahlin being here because they were terrible.
Trading for Jeff Skinner.
But all of these things had been quashed.
The 10-game winning streak.
Oh, yeah. At least with this one, it doesn't go away.
Mm-hmm.
It's the jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, this doesn't just become a fleeting moment of happiness. Figure out what you got to do with Ristolainen in the defensive core and your salary cap.
Yeah. The nice thing is
a lot of bad contracts come off your books next season.
They've got all their RFAs now signed.
Yes.
So, they're likely not going to be adding any more money unless they sign a guy to a one-way deal or something, or take on more money trading Ristolainen. So more likely, you know, in a Ristolainen trade, money's probably coming off the books. It may not even be a lot, but it's going to be something.
Yeah, it's just...
Now you have the retooled defense.
Now you just need to add another piece up front.
Yep. Hopefully you get that in the Ristolainen trade.
But remember what I said about possibly trading him for any sort of like a prospect of sorts?
Yes.
And yeah, when I brought that up with Brian Koziel, he said you want something a little more...
Right now.
Right now. Yep. But this kind of seems like it could be one of those things now. Where you could trade Ristolainen... And it becomes for a future sort of thing.
Yeah.
And you get your salary cap out.
Mm-hmm.
That makes things interesting to me. There's more options on what they can do with it. You would have to make more moves if you try to acquire and bring money back in.
It's going to get more complicated if they try to get a roster, a guy who can help in your top nine right now.
Here's what's gonna have to happen. We're gonna need Peter Chiarelli to get hired by the Wild, and then trade a first and Jason Zucker for Rasmus Ristolainen. That sounds about right.
Well, the Wild do need a GM,
and they did interview Chiarelli. Yeah, lots going on when you were on vacation, Frank.
I know. I was keeping up with some things.
But the one,
not everything.
But not, you have not caught up on Peter Chiarelli.
No.
So it's just one of these things where it's like, okay, here we go. So now it's going to be the new challenge of, well, what does Sabres Twitter get pissed about next?
They'll find something.
True.
They always do.
People always do. Maybe they'll be unhappy that they don't get any black and red jerseys.
To be fair, I would like to see that.
I mean, I would, but at the same time, let's deal with that at another time.
Yeah.
Now, Frank, game number two in the preseason comes in tomorrow. And we're going to create a bit. We did it. We gave it a test on Monday.
Okay.
And we're going to be ready for it again on Monday.
Okay.
It's called Snippets.
Go on. Yes.
Players that you would suspect could be cut based on overreactions of watching a preseason game.
Ah.
So be ready for that.
Okay.
Get your snippets ready for Monday.
Okay. I will do whatever. I will try to watch the Bills game as
there
much as possible.
So
I do have to work during that time, but I will try.
Yes, but things happen. Reports happen, too. You can catch highlights,
I will
everything.
Catch up with stuff on Twitter.
There's ways to watch.
You're going to tweet stuff, too. Don't worry. I'll read your stuff.
Exactly. Now, with the Bills, though, there's, I don't know how it's some sort of more calming atmosphere. Seeing Josh Allen doing well in the joint practices against the Panthers also gives you a nice little seeding of hope. But it's actually fairly interesting to think about one thing, and what I will do is, with this part, kind of return things back to my original vision for today's podcast. As someone that has to host Breakfast with the Bills, fantasy style, last year was tough.
Yeah.
Because entering last season, there was no one that you wanted to take in a fantasy football league. That was a Buffalo Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Sean McCoy's going through these off-the-field issues. The receivers are Calvin Benjamin and Zay Jones and Booty Juice.
And Josh Allen's a rookie.
Josh Allen wasn't even starting. Nathan Peterman was.
Yeah.
And the Bills still never have good tight ends.
Mm-hmm.
This year, Bills still don't really have a proven tight end. But Josh Allen was the top quarterback from week 12 on when he returned from his injury in fantasy football.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Foster legit won you playoff games. And he's the number four receiver, possibly.
Yeah.
Maybe even five.
Maybe.
Cole Beasley and John Brown look like fantastic additions. And there's a question at running back. But if the coaches are to be believed, LeSean McCoy should be, I won't say back to form,
but
better than last year.
Yeah, better than that.
And that's year, a rather low bar for what the tumultuous season was for him.
Mm-hmm.
But there's actually players in fantasy football drafts that could be taken that are Buffalo Bills. That aren't just LeSean McCoy.
Yeah.
Frank Gore is going to be a handcuff. Devin Singletary will be an interesting late-round flyer, especially if they like to keep using him the way that they did in the first preseason game.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me intrigued to see what this team actually can do with a fantasy football spin for once. Be great.
Interesting.
For once, mm-hmm. The Bills. potentially fantasy relevant.
You'd have to expect, too, their defense is going to be one of the first five defenses taken.
Probably, because of the fact that they do get turnovers.
Yeah.
I would like to see what happens here with that. And it also does help with, well, think about it. Bill's offense actually kind of showing some form of promise.
Yep.
For once, it's fantastic.
Yes.
So my question, so I'm going to go and do this a little bit of like a what kind of ranking would you give them sort of thing. Like, for example, I'll say like Josh Allen, you'd probably say QB2 sort of thing. So we're going to go back and forth with these players and think where they should be slotted through fantasy lineups and their role as mm-hmm. to what they should be on a team.
Yeah.
And we'll start with the tight ends because it's the weakest class. You don't even know who the Bills starting tight end is going to be day one. So the return of Tyler Kroft, let's say. Probably a tight end too worthy of watching during the midseason.
I would say so.
But yeah, there's no Bills tight end getting drafted. If you draft a Bills tight end, you did it wrong. Go back to your room, and I'll talk to you later.
Or you're in a dynasty league, and you drafted Dawson Knox.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But it would have to be like rookie-only kind of draft. Because even in a full...
A redraft, you're not taking a
full dynasty league draft. Like, say it's your first year doing a dynasty draft.
Yeah, no, then you're not.
You're probably not taking the Bills tight end.
I would say like I'm talking like a
yes,
past the first year one.
Yes, you're talking like straight rookie draft, and that's when he'll get taken.
Yeah. Like so, he did in mine.
Like I said,
I want to say like
in a majority of drafts,
third or fourth round.
In a majority of drafts, if you're taking a Bills tight end,
you're probably not doing it right.
Reevaluate your life.
Or I would say the only time it's acceptable is if it's within the last like couple rounds.
Late round flyer, I would rather take a Bills receiver than a tight end.
Sure.
And let's go to the receivers. Robert Foster is the guy that is now getting overdrafted based on where he seems on the depth chart versus where he actually is being taken in fantasy drafts. Why? Because he helped people last year.
Mm-hmm.
Players like that do come and go sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't know if Robert Foster is seen as that, but we'll find out. So I will start with Robert Foster. I think Robert Foster is worth a late round flyer based on what I think could be a DeSean Jackson-esque boom or bust sort of thing. It's not as reliable with the boom, but his spot start with him could yield you 19 points at random.
Yeah.
You might get four or one. But you also might get a bomb touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Robert Foster is a wide receiver four worthy of taking late in a fantasy draft.
Yeah, and always a potential flex option every week.
And if he's not been drafted, he's on your watch list immediately.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Next up, we will go to Zay Jones.
Probably the same.
No.
I'm saying a late round.
Okay. So you think he's pretty much the same thing, a wide receiver four sort of scenario?
I would say so. Maybe you might, I think depending on, I think at least to start the year. But he could go up to that. Wide receiver three, really just it's really for him. It's all depending on the season he's having.
Now, here's my thing about this. Kyle and I talked about this on the last podcast. Not only do I disagree with you, I don't think Zay Jones should be safe and considered a lock for the Bills roster.
Okay.
I'm going to say I'm not taking Zay Jones in a fantasy draft.
Okay.
I don't trust him. And yeah, his status on the roster might be a reason to take a flyer on him late round, but I'd rather go with a more boom or bust candidate, like a Robert Foster, who has an elite trait.
Mm-hmm.
Zay Jones does not have any elite traits.
Okay.
That doesn't necessarily pertain to fantasy football, but if Zay Jones is the four already, What are you doing? If Roberts and Brown are starting on the outside, for example, and Cole Beasley's your slot, don't even draft Zay Jones.
Okay, yeah. I see that. See where you're going.
We'll skip Andre Roberts because I don't think anyone's drafting him.
No.
We go to John Brown. Brown, like Foster, has elite speed. Unlike Foster, Brown has done it a little longer.
Brown has shown that when he's healthy, he's very productive.
And that's your question mark. Is he going to be healthy?
Yeah.
Brown, absolutely worth that late round flyer, but I also think that he'll get more volume than that. Possibly a wide receiver three.
Mm-hmm. He'll definitely be a flex option every week.
And then we go to Cole Beasley. They like Cole Beasley.
They do.
Josh Allen loves Cole Beasley.
He does.
Cole Beasley could sneak into a strong flex capability every week.
Yeah.
Especially in PPR.
Oh, absolutely.
Cole Beasley might be worth, I would consider, a mid-round pick. So you're looking like, for an extra guy in the eighth round, for example?
Maybe like you've already drafted three receivers?
Yes. Next man up, Cole Beasley.
Okay, I get you on that, yeah.
I think he is wide receiver 2/3, strong flex, PPR must have.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if Josh Allen continues to like throwing to him.
Mm-hmm.
Because everyone always says that his completion percentage issue is always about accuracy. And while sometimes that's true, it's largely about his decision making.
Yeah.
More so than his accuracy. That's where I think everything lies. If he sees Cole Beasley wide open, he's going to throw to Cole Beasley wide open. He might miss one or two times.
But if you hit 8 out of 10 times...
Cole Beasley's got 8 catches. That's 8 points.
And that's 80% for Josh Allen completion percentage.
No, not to mention that's just 8 points.
Yeah.
For Cole Beasley.
Yeah.
Already.
But I'm saying for people who talk about Allen's completion percentage being because of his accuracy, if he hits Cole Beasley 8 out of 10 times, that's already, right away, that's an 80% completion percentage to one player.
I mean, he's going to go ahead and go for deep bombs. He's not going to be like, he's never going to be that 63
Cole
completion
Beasley's
percentage
gonna
guy.
Cole Beasley's going to be that safety valve option for Josh Allen all year.
Kind of like
if it's not there for a guy like John Brown, if Brown goes on a 10-yard slant, Cole Beasley's wide open. You know, Cole Beasley's open for even just a simple 4 or 5 yard gain. Allen's gonna if Allen's decision making has gotten better, as what we're kind of seeing, he's gonna go to that every time. And even just those small gains, they add up at some. You know, when you keep going back to that, they add up.
Is Cole Beasley the safest Bills fantasy option? Not just at receiver. Buffalo Bills.
Just overall.
Yes.
He might be.
I think he could be. And I think I'm going to say yes. Safest. Because say Allen runs around too much and gets hurt.
Yeah.
Well, Matt Barkley can find Cole Beasley.
Mm-hmm.
He's at least a decent backup.
He may very well be the safest option. Yeah.
He might be the safest fantasy option for you because Josh Allen will be boom or bust.
Mm-hmm.
And if he hits you and he hits up some rushing touchdowns for you.
Oh, you're.
That's boom.
Yeah.
That's boom town.
Because of that, Allen himself might go from QB2 to QB1.
And I think he already is a fringe. Mm-hmm. His rushing alone allows for that to be the problem for other fantasy owners is that.
Yeah.
When do you end up taking Josh Allen? He's going to be through that second group of quarterbacks, right?
Yeah.
Is he the first amongst them? Is he early amongst them? Or is the national hatred of Josh Allen going to tend to bog that down and get you more fantasy value? If you're in a league like that where people don't respect Josh Allen, take advantage.
Yeah.
His running is stupendous, and he's still going to use it. They don't want him to run all the time, but they're going to keep it as an option. And when you weaponize running, instead of him running for his damn life like he had to last year, when you weaponize it and you structure it and you have blocking, that means that they mean to do it. That means that they're going to have proper holes and everything's going to work in that way where it's like almost a goal line package sort of thing. That's 6-point TDs, not just 4 in your standard scoring, which first off, I always think is stupid. But I digress. Let's just stick with Josh Allen here. We'll go to the running backs last. Because we're already talking about it. We mentioned like he's a guy that could be a fringe.
Yeah, I think. Yeah,
and he might right be a matchup now. Starter.
Yeah.
If you're a streamer, Josh Allen might be a fantastic guy to keep along for you.
Yeah.
Like he might be a guy that you roster and then you stream other guys with him as well. Just so that you have something. I'm not a quarterback streamer. I don't like doing that. I like having a guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that if you're streaming, Josh Allen should be a player you consider. If a team does not already pick him up in your league and he's available, he's absolutely a streaming option. You look at it and you see like a weak team, for example, like Cincinnati. They could be had.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Allen could be a guy early on that can give you some points. Win you a game.
Week 2.
Giants are a team that you can have and take advantage of. Like early on, he might have a strong setting in order to succeed.
Right.
You also have, you know, a weaker defense like Pittsburgh later on in the season.
Josh, you know, it's very possible that you talk about Robert Foster being a guy who won teams championships.
You got Miami twice. Like Miami's gonna be garbage.
Yeah, Josh Allen,
and he owned.
What are the possibilities that Josh Allen could be that this year? He's a guy who might he like it. It's different because he's a quarterback and he will get drafted.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a guy who you are gonna start more often later in the year because of certain matchups and. He's going to accumulate those points, and a playoff team's going to start him and win games because of it.
Yeah, and that happened last year with Allen and with Foster.
So it's very possible that Allen could be that again.
And if you're in one of these leagues, put a watch on him. Put an eye on him.
Yeah.
In Buffalo, I don't have to worry about this. Like, you're watching him every week.
Yeah.
But if you're listening and you're out of the area and you're with other people that aren't Bills fans, take advantage. Make sure that you figure out what he is. And now we go to the running backs, where it looks like there is a disaster for fantasy owners.
Like, LeSean McCoy is going to get drafted, but it's not going to be in that RB2 category.
Yeah.
It's probably going to be RB3.
A guy that you're going to need to start every now and then.
Yeah, maybe he's a flex option.
Maybe a flex option. The presence of Frank Gore annoys you. The
yes.
presence of Devin Singletary probably really annoys you if you have him in a dynasty league.
Well, if you have him in a...
Like, if you have McCoy in a dynasty league, you're probably kicking everything right now.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because in 2 years, he goes from surefire RB1 to... Can I start him?
Yeah.
And last year was really rough. He had just bad games because...
But I think there is a possibility that because of how bad it was last year for him...
That you can get some value?
Yeah, he might get underdrafted. You talk about Robert Foster being overdrafted. LeSean McCoy could get under.
And that's something
that... Because if he has a bounce back year and you take LeSean McCoy as like your third or fourth running back taken... And he starts to play well, you know, that's immediate value right there. Where
and that's could, where Louis DiBiase wrote that.
Yeah, and he could elevate himself to a flex option to start. And maybe if he continues to play well, maybe not as a 1,000-yard rusher, but somewhere close to that, along with his receiving abilities too, in a PPR league, he could elevate himself to that back to that RB2 status.
And Louis wrote about this. Louis DiBiase, by the way. Find him on Twitter at DiBiase, L-O-E. He's going to be the new co-host with me for Breakfast with the Bills, fantasy style. And he wrote about, could LeSean McCoy become a fantasy value for you this year?
Yeah.
And that sparked me to, you know, having this sort of conversation with these sorts of things because of the fact that you know, when's the last time we got to talk about several Bills as fantasy capables?
Yeah.
Devin Singletary had to have been a first round pick in a lot of rookie drafts.
Oh, absolutely.
At least late round first.
In mine, because if we want to talk about mine, because I just had mine a couple weeks ago.
Remember, Frank, nobody cares about your league.
I know. But I'm just saying.
But
I saw him go six overall.
Yeah, at the very least, he's a mid to late first round pick in a lot of dynasty drafts.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting thing, is that a Bills offensive player is getting taken there.
Yep.
If this offensive line could be healthy and Josh Allen can figure things out decision making wise, the Bills offense will be fantasy relevant.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something we have not been able to talk about
for a long time.
For almost a decade.
Yeah.
The Bills have always had decent running backs.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't had a good, decent fantasy team for a little while. We'll see what happens.
You always have that one or two guys.
Hit us up, by the way, if you want questions answered about fantasy football. I'm back in the mood of things, dude. It's time.
Yeah, I'm feeling good. Last year was just really tough. It was really tough and unlucky because the teams that I had, I either had a bunch of injuries or guys were underperforming.
I was only in one league last year.
I was in
four. The fantasy football show host was in one fantasy league last year.
And I was in four.
I'm up to six.
Jeez.
Well, it was almost Ryan O'Reilly. Like, I didn't have my love for the game, and I still had to do it anyway. And okay. Now it's back, and better than ever.
Like, I'm feeling good this year, but I'm not going to do four leagues. If anything, I might do two.
I'm in two guillotines, despite never doing it.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun, or it could last very quickly and be done.
Yeah.
Whatever happens, happens. But I'm back.
The only one that I'm in right now is I'm a co-commissioner in that one.
Yes. So. But I'm back.
Yeah.
Ask me your questions. I love
answering. Ask away.
Like, during the show last year for Breakfast with the Bills, my favorite part is always answering questions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Because they're relying on you to give the answer.
Yeah.
Right or wrong, they can hate you forever, or they might be like, dude, you saved my ass. And I'm not scared of that. I like doing that. It's fun. And sometimes you're wrong. But that's okay.
That's what fantasy football is.
That's what fantasy football really is. And I'm going to do what I can, though, to help you. So if you've got questions, hit me up at DerekKramer49. You can hit up Louie at DiBiase, L-O-E. You can hit up Frank. Frank likes to help out with these sorts of things with us. And also our esteemed producer, Mike Jafari, for Breakfast with the Bills. Mike loves having himself in that fantasy gamut as well.
Mm-hmm.
And at MJafari WGR.
My Twitter is at Frank R. Curry.
Yes. So we love helping you. We're selfless people like that. Thank you for listening to the three-part Leftovers podcast today that now we'll not even try to sound. We're not even going to try to make it sound like we produced this in one sitting. I already broke the fourth wall here. So it happened. It's going to be whatever. So whatever. But thank you for listening. Frank's back.
I'm back.
The band's probably back together on Monday,
mm-hmm.
which would be fantastic.
Yeah.
At the very least, the band should be back together by Thursday. Oh my God, Frank, we didn't get the dummy of the week.
We'll do it next week.
What do you mean we'll do it next week?
Do you have one?
You think I don't have one?
All right, Hit me with it then.
Hitting me with it with
the dummy of the week.
Dante, I'm trying to fight these demons, but I'm dummy thick and the clap of my ass keeps alerting them.
That's right. I always have to have that produced open in there because it's fantastic. It's stupid. It doesn't make any sense and I don't care. All right. This week's dummy of the week, Frank. It is Kian Fahey. Mr. I block everyone that doesn't agree with me on Twitter.
Go on.
Kian Fahey. Look, I get that people don't like Josh Allen. Whatever. You can go ahead and say that. That's fine. But you know what you can't go ahead and get away with? Thinking Jacoby Brissett is good.
Ugh.
I'd bring up the tweet, but I'm blocked.
He's a backup.
He's not even a good backup. There was a throw in Colts training camp where Rock Ya-Sin literally takes the ball from Devin Funchess because it was thrown behind him. I get being wrong. It's okay to have the opinion. It's okay to have a bad opinion sometimes if you're willing to back it up. But the video that he shows about Jacoby Brissett is a decision on an underneath pass that goes for 4 yards. Riveting stuff. Did you check out the rest of his game? Or the rest of his being Jacoby Brissett? The best part about Jacoby Brissett's game is his Twitter game. And trust me, this isn't the greatest dummy of the week, but it is the dummy of the week. Thank you for listening to the Leftovers Podcast. Derek Kramer.
Frank R. Curry.
Yeah, that guy's back. And, well, Bills play in a preseason game tomorrow. Thank you to Mark Schofield for joining us. By the way, you could check out his work. You can find him on Twitter, at Mark Schofield. If you're not following him, you need to. Yes, he's a Patriots guy, but he also gives you nuanced quarterback takes that are very balanced and fair, unlike that Kian Fahey idiot. Follow Mark Schofield, at Mark Schofield, because you also get the bonus of Letterkenny gifts. And nobody should ever not get Letterkenny gifts. Thank you to Mark for joining us. And he's also got the SCO show on Pat's Pulpit. So if you want some insider information on the enemy, well, Mark's a good place to go. He's a good dude. He likes us Bills fans. He's not an arrogant jerk like some Patriots fans are. Or Patriots, or people that cover the Patriots. Mark's great people. Follow Mark Schofield, at Mark Schofield. Thank you to Mark for joining us. Thank you, Frank, for coming in to post-vacation podcast.
Of course.
And Bills, good to have you back. Bills, Panthers.
Preseason game number
two. Preseason. Number two. You know he's here on WGR. Thank you for listening on WGR550.com. Until next time. Pitter-patter. Let's get at her.
Hi, my name is Lloyd Lockridge, and I'm the host of a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. In this podcast, I'm going to have people on to tell unusual and sometimes far-fetched stories about their families.
I've heard my whole life that she invented the margarita.
And then we're going to investigate those stories and find out how much of it is true.
He gets a patent 1 month before the Wright brothers. Oh, my God.
Please follow and listen to Family Lore, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.